The top story is the military conflict between Russia and Ukraine enters its second day, with Moscow saying scores of Ukrainian military sites have been destroyed in the attacks. Ukraine's president says he is not afraid of talking about neutrality, as his request for joining NATO has remained unanswered. Also ahead in the U.S., three former police officers involved in the 2020 killing of black man George Floyd are found guilty of violating his civil rights. Those were the top stories over here in Tehran.
Welcome to the program.
Our top story, the conflict between Russia and Ukraine enters its second day. Moscow now says its forces have destroyed 118 Ukrainian military infrastructure sites. The Russian Defense Ministry also says troops will be deployed to help guard the Chernobyl power plant, which was captured on Thursday. Meanwhile, Kiev says Russia has bombed 33 civilian sites over the past day. That comes as Russian troops keep advancing through Ukraine. A senior official there says Russian forces will make their way to areas just outside the capital, Kiev, later on Friday, even though soldiers are putting up a fight on all fronts. Since the early hours of Friday, blasts have gone off in major Ukrainian cities, including Kiev. The president has also spoken of sabotage groups entering the city.
There's also information that enemy sabotage groups have entered Kiev. So I ask the people of Kiev, be careful, respect the curfew rules. I'm staying in the government's quarter together with all those who are needed for the central government to work.
Zelensky says the Russian advance has been stopped in most directions. He complains that his country has been left alone by the world and that sanctions are not enough to stop Russia. Earlier, he said he's not afraid of talking about neutrality, as his request for joining NATO has remained unanswered. The Ukrainian president says the Western military alliance is afraid of accepting his country. Over 100 Ukrainians have been killed since Russia began its attack Thursday. Kiev says it has killed dozens of Russians and pro-Russian troops. In the meantime, Moscow says it controls Ukraine's skies and has spoken of readiness to negotiate terms of surrender. The European Union imposes what it calls the harshest package of sanctions against Russia over its military actions in Ukraine.
We're now targeting 7% of the Russian banking market, but also key state-owned companies, including the field of defense. And these sanctions will increase Russia's borrowing costs, raise inflation, and gradually erode Russia's industrial base.
Von der Leyen made the comments in a press conference after an emergency meeting with European leaders. During the presser, French President Emmanuel Macron said the Russian attack on Ukraine shows Europe needs to become a real power and be independent in the fields of energy and security. Some Western countries are also taking punitive measures against Russia over its Ukraine attack. The United States announced a wave of new sanctions on Moscow, targeting five major Russian banks. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced sanctions against some 60 individuals and entities. Australia and the UK have also taken similar measures. Let's discuss the situation a little bit further with the help of gentlemen who join me at this point of the program. Our man in Brussels, Jerome Hughes, out of Brussels. I also will have Mr. Abbas Juma. He's a political observer of the Russian Federal News Agency out of Moscow, the Russian capital. Of course, let's just begin, if you will, Jerome, out of Moscow, and ask Mr. Juma, what is the root cause of the current crisis, Mr. Juma, and how could this conflict be avoided, and what can be done now to stop the escalation, if you will?
So, first of all, it's very important to say that this is not an invasion. This is especially a military operation against the Nazis, Ukrainian Nazis, war criminals who killed people of Donbas for 8 years. And for 8 years, no one talks about it like today. In United States, in Great Britain, in France, and other countries. So did you know that Donbass has been destroyed for 8 years? I'm sure that you didn't know about it or without details. So this is not my opinion. This opinion is shared by most observers and politicians. And Ukraine didn't want to fulfill its obligations. Ukrainian authorities have been destroying everything Russian inside their country, inside Ukraine. Everything Russian, like history and language. Finally, Ukraine's attempts to join NATO and create nuclear weapons, as you know. And today we can say that Ukraine is a real threat. The Mets don't help, so they need operation, military operation, serious operation, and we started it. So Ukrainians, and it's very important to say that Ukrainians are our brothers. We have no problems with Ukrainian people, with citizens, only with their authorities, only with Nazi troops who kill people in Donbass. And in my opinion, there is no difference between these troops, Nazi troops, and ISIS terrorists in Syria or Iraq, for example. So I think this is the main reason.
Sure. Okay, understood. Jerome, in Brussels, it's good to have you. Tell me about these sanctions that the EU has announced. And, it is calling it the worst sanctions or the harshest package of sanctions. What are you hearing on that, Jerome?
Yeah, well, the EU summit ended in the early hours of this morning, Friday, and the leaders describe this as a massive sanctions package, and it's mainly targeting Russia's financial and transport sectors. And the thing about it is, I mean, the reaction from Ukraine, the Ukrainian president is saying that the sanctions don't go far enough, both from, the United States, from the UK, and from the EU, because they're saying they want to see Russia taken out of the SWIFT system. The SWIFT system is the cross-border payment system. It's the backbone of international financial transactions. And there's no doubt that if Russia was taken out of SWIFT, it would have a devastating economic impact. The problem is with that, there are two sort of lines of thinking in relation to SWIFT, which happens to be based here in Belgium, by the way. But one of the lines of thinking is that, first of all, this could backfire because there are some EU countries that have very close financial links to Russia, even beyond energy, for example, Germany. So that situation, because Russia is very much involved in the international financial system through SWIFT, to take it out of it would actually have very dire consequences for other countries. And then the other line of thinking is that, perhaps they don't want to push Russia too far, be too provocative in terms of, obviously, it's a nuclear power. Obviously, they don't want a situation where this escalates further beyond Ukraine. And so basically, those are the two reasons why maybe SWIFT is not on the table at present. But they're saying these are massive sanctions. They're in addition to the previous sanctions that we got a few days ago in relation targeting the 351 lawmakers who passed the resolution, who passed the vote in Russia in relation to making these regions independent. And also, financial institutions are being targeted. But as I say, these new rounds, particularly, I suppose, the striking part is the targeting the transport sector. Another development is that, later today, Friday, here in Brussels, around 6 p.m., Brussels time, Belgium time, we're going to have a press conference from NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, following a video conference, basically a NATO summit from the 30 countries. So we might have maybe more news later in the day in terms of how NATO intends to react at this stage. But I mean, I think we already know, because let's face it, every press conference that Stoltenberg gives is almost identical. The script is almost the same. A little bit of the circumstances have clearly changed. But I mean, we already know that they'll probably announce a greater expansion of NATO forces further eastwards.
All right. Going back to Mr. Juma in Moscow, to what extent do you think Russia's security concerns enshrined in the Minsk agreement are right now, and its implementation and the issue of NATO expansion? Right now, how much do you think these concerns on the Russian part are justified?
I need to say that NATO is a real threat. NATO was created against us many years ago, against USSR, to be exact. And as you know, in December 1991, the Soviet Union finally collapsed. However, NATO still exists and expands. I hope everyone understands that NATO is not a humanitarian organization, yeah, it's a military organization led by United States. So Russia is worried about NATO near Russian boats, just as Iranian is worried about Israel in Azerbaijan, for example. So I think it's a real threat, yes, of course.
Ukraine now says, Mr. Juma, that it's not afraid of talking about neutrality, as its president said, its request for joining NATO has remained unanswered. The question is, why would you say the Western military alliance is hesitant about taking in Ukraine?
Very simple, my colleague. Ukraine is a poor, weak, unstable, corrupt country. So not all NATO countries want to accept Ukraine. As we know, to join NATO, Ukraine needs to get support for all countries of the alliance. It's a rule. So who is against? In fact, the main countries of Europe, Germany and France. But, you know, today everything has changed, so we can expect everything. That's why Russia started the military operation, in my opinion.
All right. Let's just go back again to Jerome in Brussels and ask him another question regarding in what way he sees this escalation perhaps come to an end, or what are the words where you are, Jerome? I'm very interested of how long do you think the EU is prepared to go with the situation and to continue the Pandora's box, I would say, that they have opened.
Well, the big thing at the moment, the two big things, in fact, would be, well, three, if you include the economy, energy, and escalation. First of all, the biggest concern they would have is that there would be some sort of escalation outside of Ukraine. That's one of the biggest concerns that the West would have, and our colleague is absolutely right. The reason that Ukraine cannot join the EU or NATO is because it doesn't meet the standards in terms of corruption and so on, and its economy. You know, it's being propped up for the past 8 years by the European Union and the UK and the US. They will also be looking, I mean, energy, some of the sanctions that we talked about, I mean, I mentioned transport, I should have been clearer. I mean, that's relating to, you know, airplane parts and also, you know, that type of thing that Russia needs in terms of its aviation industry. But in terms of energy, they cannot afford to cut off, you know, the energy supplies from Russia to the EU. But the question is, could Russia do that? Like, if these sanctions that we're seeing from across the Western world, if they do have a major impact on Russia, could Russia make a move to limit or restrict or cut off energy supplies to the EU? That would be devastating. So they're looking at that. And then, of course, the thing they're looking at, the economic repercussions of the sanctions that they are placing, because the kickback from those sanctions could be very severe on EU nations, which are already struggling from the pandemic, from the 2008 financial crisis. You know, the Eurozone is already struggling with very, very high inflation and already very high energy prices. So, you know, it's all about, for now, they're looking at escalation, energy, and economy.
Thank you very much, both of you. Mr. Abbas Juma, political observer of the Russian Federal News Agency out of Moscow, as well as our own man, Jerome Hughes, in Brussels with the update that he gave us. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time, both of you. Well, now, a jury in the U.S. state of Minnesota says three former police officers involved in the 2020 killing of black man George Floyd are found guilty of violating his civil rights.
Today, former officers Tao, King, and Lane stand convicted by a jury of their peers for willfully violating Mr. Floyd's civil rights, the same rights guaranteed to all of us by the United States Constitution. These officers had a moral responsibility, a legal obligation, and a duty to intervene. And by failing to do so, they committed a crime.
Based on U.S. legislation, all law enforcement officers must provide medical aid to those in their custody. Now, in Floyd's case, the three former cops are convicted of showing deliberate indifference to his medical needs. Two were also convicted of failing to stop the use of, quote, unreasonable force against the African-American man. The trio will now remain free on bail pending their sentencing hearing, but the new conviction can affect the severity of the sentence. That has raised hopes for serving justice.
How y'all doing? I'm Philonis Floyd, brother of George Floyd. I have my nephew with me, Brandon Williams, who George raised like a son. Today is a good day for us, that this is the first time that I ever seen something like this. Did four white officers were convicted of killing an African-American man.
The fourth former officer involved in Floyd's killing was Derek Chauvin. Last year, he was convicted of murder and is now serving 22 years in prison. Chauvin knelt on Floyd's neck for nearly 10 minutes before he died. The incident happened in May of 2020 in the city of Minneapolis. It sparked months of protests, both inside and outside the U.S., against police brutality and raised calls for justice for the black people. The Yemeni army says it has shot down an Emirati spy drone over the country's Jowf province. Army spokesman Yahya Sari says the drone was American-made and operated by the UAE Air Force. He added the aircraft was brought down early on Friday while it was conducting, quote, hostile operation. In the past several months, the Yemeni army has shot down dozens of spy drones operated by both Saudi Arabia and the UAE over Yemen's airspace. The army has also carried out attacks against Saudi and UAE targets in retaliation for their ongoing war on Yemen. The U.S. has a hand in the war by providing weapons to Riyadh and Abu Dhabi. And that's it with international news. Stay tuned.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We continue from where we left you last week, and here are ayahs 31 and 32 of Surah Najm.
وللله ما في السماوات وما في الأرض ليجزي الذين أساءوا بما عملوا ويجزي الذين أحسنوا بالحسنى الذين يجتنبون كبائر الإثم والفواحش إلا اللمم إن ربك واسع المغفرة هو أعلم بكم إذ أنشأكم من الأرض وإذ أنتم أجنة في بطون أمهاتكم فلا تزكوا أنفسكم هو أعلم بمن اتقى.
To Allah belongs whatever is in the heavens and whatever is in the earth, that he may punish those who do evil for what they have done, and reward those who do good with the best of rewards. Those who avoid major sins and indecencies, excepting minor and occasional lapses, indeed your Lord is expansive in his forgiveness. He knows best since the time He produced you from the earth, and when you were fetuses in the bellies of your mothers. So do not flaunt your piety. He knows best who are God-weary. If you might recall, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last Friday, we referred to the limited knowledge and perception of those who are unmindful of God Almighty and have exchanged their human dignity and honor with mundane possessions. We also said that conjecture regarding faith and vital matters results in irreparable loss, and the omniscient Lord knows best who have gone astray from the path of truth and who deserve guidance. The ayahs that we recited to you today point to the infinite power of the Almighty Creator, to whom belong whatever exists in the heavens and the earth, and therefore he solely deserves to be worshipped. The main purpose of the creation of the world is to test the obedience of the best of creation, that is, mankind, who, unlike other creatures, has been given the intellect and the power of speech to discern good from evil, in order to be guided toward the path of perfection through existential, legislative and didactic methods applied by the prophets. Thus, Ayah 31 means to say that those who indulge in disbelief and sins bring punishment upon themselves after having been given respite and shown mercy, while for the virtuous God Almighty has reserved the best of rewards. Ayah 32 says, God Almighty bestows further favors upon those who refrain from committing grave sins, and this abstention from committing grave sins leads to forgiving of lesser sins. But persistence in committing lesser sins turns them into grave sins. Our Creator is best aware of our inner feelings and even thoughts that flash across our minds. He is so merciful that He forgives minor sins because of abstention from committing grave ones, which could also be forgiven through sincere repentance. Towards its end, the ayah cautions the virtuous as well against flaunting their piety or doing of good, since ostentation, pretension, reproach, and the like are negative qualities. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, creation is not without aim. Hence, we are accountable to God for our deeds. Number two, righteous people are also prone to lapses, but the purity of their character makes them repent and seek forgiveness. Number three, never should we consider ourselves to be immune from evil deeds, since vanity and self-conceit leads to error. And number four, the Almighty Creator is aware of every minute thing, even thoughts that flash across our minds. Now let us listen to ayahs 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, and 38 of the same surah.
أَفَرَأَيْتَ الَّذِي تَوَلَّى وَأَعْطَى قَلِيلًا وَأَكْدَى أَعِنْدَهُ عِلْمُ الْغَيْبِ فَهُوَ يَرَى أَمْ لَمْ يُنَبَّأْ بِمَا فِي صُحُفِ مُوسَى وإبراهيم الذي وفى ألا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى.
Did you see him who turned away, gave a little and held off? Does he have the knowledge of the unseen so that he sees? Has he not been informed of what is in the scriptures of Moses and of Abraham, who fulfilled his summons, that no bearer shall bear another's burden? These ayahs stress each and every person's responsibilities in a different way, and are a warning to those who think they can place the burden of their sins on others by giving them something meager in the mortal life of the transient world, on the assumption of being relieved of their heavy burden on Judgment Day. Some of them are so niggardly that they're not inclined to help the needy from the wealth that God has given them, and try to shrug off their responsibility for the evil they thus commit. If Ayah 35 puts the rhetoric question whether such a person has knowledge of the unseen, ayahs 36 and 37 refute these false beliefs by pointing out that even the previously revealed heavenly scriptures, such as the books given to Moses and Abraham, peace upon them, God had clarified that no person may take the responsibility of others, and each and every person stands accountable for his own sins. Prophet Abraham is cited as an example of supreme obedience to God, since he fulfilled such difficult tribulations as being content with divine will, while being thrown by the tyrant Nimrod into the huge fire that miraculously turned into a cool garden for him. And his steadfastness in sacrificing his son Ishmael, as commanded by the Lord Most High, who, at the last moment, substituted a ram for the equally obedient youth. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, we must help the poor and the needy without being niggardly from what God has given us, since whatever we possess is nothing but a trial for us. Number two, Prophet Abraham was the role model of self-sacrifice and fulfillment of duties. Number three, we should be on guard against the deception of those who entice us with sins, saying they would take the responsibility. And number four, every person is responsible for his or her deeds, and no one takes the burden of another's sin. In conclusion of this week's episode, let us listen to ayahs 39, 40, 41, and 42 of Surah Najm.
وَأَن لَيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ إِلَّا مَا سَعَى وَأَنَّ سَعْيَهُ سَوْفَ يُرَى ثُمَّ يُجْزَاهُ الْجَزَاءَ الْأَوْفَى وَأَنَّ إِلَىٰ رَبِّكَ الْمُنْتَهَى.
And that nothing belongs to man except what he strives for, and that he will soon be shown his endeavor. Then he will be rewarded for it with the fullest reward, and that the terminus is towards your Lord. It is clear from these ayahs that nothing belongs to us except what we strive for, whether good or bad, which means everyone enjoys the fruits of their efforts. The one who perseveres in the fulfillment of his or her tasks not only will soon receive the reward of his or her righteous good deeds in full, but also will reap further rewards for the same, because of God's mercy. It is mentioned in the Noble Quran that each and every righteous good deed will accrue tenfold rewards, while some God-weary believers will receive rewards several times as much. Ayah 42 means to say that everything shall in duty aptly return to the Almighty Creator, since He is the final cause and the pivot of the world of creation. The world's beginning and its end rests on God's pure essence alone. These ayahs teach us that, number one, our duty is to fulfill our responsibilities without bothering about results. Number two, no deed is perishable, and it is the immortality of deeds and the just system of reward and punishment that encourages believers to do good deeds. Number three, God is aware of our deeds and efforts and grants countless rewards. And number four, the belief that the end is with God makes us strive for good deeds.
Spotlight. Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to this edition of The Spotlight. On Thursday morning, Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered attacks on Ukraine, hitting multiple cities and bases by air, land, and sea. Russia says the attacks would only target military sites in order to stop Ukrainian aggression in the region and that Russia has no intention of occupying Ukrainian territories. Meanwhile, NATO Chief Jens Stoltenberg called the attacks, quote, a brutal act of war, while the U.S., the EU, and the U.K. have reacted by threatening to impose tough sanctions on Russia with the aim of crippling its economy. In this edition, we will be discussing the different aspects of these recent developments in Ukraine. But first, let's bring in our correspondent, Jerome Hughes, from the EU headquarters. You told us before that the EU heads of states would be meeting to discuss these developments. What updates do you have for us?
That's right. Right now, in fact, they are landing in Belgium to take part in a summit here in Brussels, which is due to begin in the next 60 minutes or so. And what the EU leaders at this summit, this face-to-face summit here in Brussels, are promising is the toughest sanctions package European Union against any country, and of course it's directed towards Russia. Tomorrow, Friday, the NATO leaders are due to hold a summit as well. That will be a virtual one, and they will agree during that meeting to expand NATO forces further eastwards within the countries that are members of the alliance. So that's an expansion of NATO with more troops and military hardware within its own alliance members further eastward. Earlier today, we heard from the President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, talking about the EU needing to be ready to take in refugees from Ukraine. Of course, when we have people coming in from Africa and the Middle East seeking asylum in the EU after being bombed by Western powers, they're always described as migrants. But when they're coming from Ukraine, they're described as refugees. The big questions on the table will be, what will this sanctions package look like? How will Russia respond? How could things escalate? What will be the economic impact for Russia of the sanctions? And what will be the economic impact for the EU in relation to these sanctions? And of course, the whole issue as well around energy security is a major issue.
Thank you very much, Jerome Hughes from the EU headquarters. Now, to continue this discussion, we will be joined by founder of Transnational Live, Jan Oberg from Lund, and also journalist and political analyst Elias Magnier from Brussels. Let's begin with Mr. Oberg. Now, thank you very much for joining us on this edition of Spotlight.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Sir, if you could please explain to us, how did we get to this point? What do you think led Russia to attack Ukraine?
It's a long story, but I think, and I've written about it, I think it goes back to the end of the First Cold War and the broken promises by NATO, by the Clinton administration in 1994, because all Western leaders of any importance went over to Gorbachev and promised him not to expand NATO. And that was also a precondition for reuniting Germany. And then you had NATO expansion. You now today have 10 former Warsaw Pact countries, which are NATO members. And I have written long ago, as has a number of other experts in this field, said Ukraine can never become a full member of NATO. But there could be other models which would be interesting to explore. So I think that the whole thing has a very long gestation period, something that started out when Russia was on its knees and had broken down and the Warsaw Pact had disappeared. And by the way, at that time, I said it would be reasonable to close down NATO and do what Gorbachev and others suggested at the time, namely a different type of United Nations for Europe or something where we could talk about our problems. I think it has also to do with the fact that NATO has been extremely bad at listening to Russia's and Putin's concerns, such as he expressed them at the Munich conference in 2007. Now, all I've said this far is not an endorsement and not an acceptance of what was done last night. This is outrageous, should not have been done, a clear violation of international law. There would have been other ways you could deal with that, but I refuse to accept that everything is a fault of Russia in this whole period here. And we are talking about 40 to 50 participants in an extremely complex conflict. And of course, this act, the bombing of Ukraine, unfortunately will, apart from a lot of human cost, it will also lead to, it's a gift, I'm afraid I can say that. It's a gift to NATO for the idea of 2 or 3 or whatever percentage of gross national product being spent on this. It will create a very long time of Cold War in Europe. I wish solution non-violence. But everybody on all sides are only speaking about weapons, militarist thinking, brinkmanship, blame game, etc. And that's why we are where we are today.
Thank you very much for that. It was quite brief considering the fact that we don't have much time. Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Elia Manier, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, sir, according to Mr. Oberg, Putin has accused the U.S. and its allies of ignoring Russia's demands to prevent Ukraine from joining NATO and also offering Moscow the security guarantees that it needed. How significant were these demands for Russia, and why would it lead to an attack, in your opinion?
Thank you for having me. I think it is very important for Russia because the distance between Ukraine and Moscow is very short. And as President Putin said, for a ballistic missile, it needs between 4 to 5 minutes to reach Moscow, which doesn't give the opportunity for Russia to deploy the interception missile and stop any attack against his territory. Now, we see NATO has expanded in the most of the former Soviet Union country, which is the Warsaw Pact, and that is a clear violation of the verbal agreement. Unfortunately, there is no written agreement of the verbal agreement established by James Baker and President Mikhail Gorbachev in 1990 and Warren Christopher and President Yeltsin in 1993. And the deployment of NATO missiles all along the borders of Russia, particularly when it now already the only countries that are missing within the NATO circle is Ukraine and Georgia, regardless that is also Bosnia and Herzegovina, but that's far from the Russian border, it represents a very serious menace and threat to the Russian national security. Now, the problem NATO is facing today and the West is Putin is not ready to compromise as his predecessor, Gorbachev and Yeltsin, and accept or close an eye as his predecessor did on NATO expansion starting from 1997, where there are today around 30 members of NATO, including most of the former Soviet republic. And that creates a serious danger that Putin highlighted, particularly when NATO started to train the Ukrainian army and carry on drills. And the last one was September in 2021. This is very serious for Russia. It has warned the West of not doing it, of pulling out the forces from Ukraine when they come to do military maneuver. There are no station forces. However, there are intentions to do that in Ukraine and in Georgia. So President Putin today is fighting a war on Ukraine and Georgia, because these are the two countries that are next on NATO list. Notwithstanding the fact that NATO said they have not yet completed the requirement to join NATO, but the requirement will be fulfilled in a year or two. So that's why Putin is reacting strongly after giving the necessary warning to the West that this is not acceptable, and the West thought that Putin is not going to go to war because he would be afraid of the harsh sanction against Russia. They did not evaluate that the national security is far more important for Russia than the economic sanctions.
Very good. That's right. Exactly. Mr. Oberg, let's bring you in for this one. We see everyone, not just us, everyone seems to be talking about these attacks with complete disregard of the Minsk agreement. This is definitely playing a role in all of this. Could Ukraine have prevented all this?
Well, as far as I understand it, the Minsk agreement nobody has put pressure on Ukraine to move into the question of relative autonomy for the two republics in the Donbass. And if things are not moving in that way, both by the countries who are party to it, and it's a United Nations document, and there are people who say, which I've not checked, that America has actually encouraged Ukraine to not go along with it, then I can see one more reason that Putin is getting angry and frustrated. But still, I think this is overdoing it, because one thing is the frustrations, the concerns, the security concerns, the legitimate sense of not being listened to and taken serious, and the very, in my view, very offensive, unnecessarily provocative NATO policies during 30 years, there would have been other ways of making your point than killing innocent people in Ukraine, which unfortunately is happening in the very hours we're talking here. And that is where I come back to the conflict dynamics of this. It may well be that nobody wanted a war, but we are ending up having it because everybody is running on four things. One, tit for tat. You do something to me, I do something worse to you. And then it goes on like this. It's called, it ends up with escalation. Two, the whole language is based on weapons, on moving weapons, on arming, on saying that we are under threat. NATO has a military which is 12 times bigger military expenditures than Russia, and Russia's are going down, NATO's are going up. But it's all a talk about men and weapons. There is no sense of concepts or analysis of what the problem is, or psychology or empathy and some of the other things that normal mature people are using. But these leaders have become leaders because they can speak the military language. They can move around troops. They can do this and that. But they can't make peace. I used to say a little populistically that anybody can start a fight in a bar. But everybody cannot stop people from fighting in a bar. To do peace, conflict resolution, peace, reconciliation, find structures in the future that all parties can live with and all that, is out of the training, out of the area of knowledge with these people who've never read a book about peacemaking. And that signifies the present generation of European politicians compared with people like Willy Brandt, or Gorbachev and others who had a background in and knew what war was. And that I find very dangerous. And finally, I would say this military language is tit for tat. It's brinkmanship. I am bigger and stronger than you, so I dare go out and do things you did not think I would do. And three, it's blame game. All parties saying it's only the others. We actually not in conflict, because conflicts takes two. There's only us good guys, and then all the others out there are criminals.
Thank you.
And bad. There's not even a conflict in people's minds. This is intellectually at such a low level, and I used to say you can't have militarism without a very low intellectual
Thank you
level.
Very much, Mr. Ober. The question is, at this point where oil prices have gone up over $100 now, the stocks are plummeting, the EU depends on Russia's gas. Would these sanctions harm Russia or the EU even more? Mr. Magnier, if you could please answer this question.
Well, I think, yes, the sanction will harm Russia inevitably. However, Putin was ready for the sanction because he knew this is going to be the West reaction, particularly the United States and its allies, mainly the United Kingdom. Europe is still hesitant because it is still supplied by the Russian gas through Nord Stream 1, and its import from Russia reach the 40% of its needs of gas. Now, Putin has $630 billion in foreign currency accumulated throughout the years as a buffer. However, the local economy will suffer under sanctions because sanctions always create damage and harm to the population, not to the regime or to the state. Nevertheless, there is no comparison between the sanctions that are coming or started to come against Russia and the security of Russia when its security is really undermined by NATO and represent a serious threat to the national security of the country. Therefore, yes, there are sanctions, there are more sanctions that are expected to be imposed on Russia, particularly from the United Kingdom, racing to find out what they can, how they can harm Putin domestically, and how they can turn the elite Russian against him, or the population against Putin's decision. Nevertheless, we've seen that Cuba, Iran, Venezuela, and many other countries are under hard sanctions. They have survived. They did not submit to the U.S. And U.S. exerting its favorite hobby to impose sanctions on population is not going to allow it to achieve its goal.
Well, thank you very much. Now, back to Mr. Oberg. China has reacted very interestingly to these developments by saying that it understands why Russia has reached this point, and it understands Russia's concerns, security concerns. Do you think this could set a precedent for China to do the same, considering China's concerns regarding Taiwan?
No, I don't believe that. The Chinese are thinking completely differently when it comes to long-term issues, conflict resolution, and these types of things. And China is today probably the country which, in international law terms, are most obedient to and most frequently talk about international law, not the U.S. internationally order-based order, you know, the one that Blinken talks about, which is the opposite of or a break away from international law and the U.N. Charter. China stands on the U.N. Charter. And I'm looking forward to seeing how they actually react to this, because this this type of bombing another country.
So back to Mr. Oberg. One of the questions that was repeated many times, sanctioning Mr. Putin himself, and whether that was one of the options on the table or not. And, of course, Mr. Magnier said something very nice. I really like that sentence you mentioned. Choosing between national security and sanctions and economics, of course, national security comes first. So, in your opinion, how effective, Mr. Oberg, do you think these sanctions can be?
Well, I have said before that I think it's a miscalculation. It will be that devastating for Russia and not devastating for the West itself. And it's a characteristic of much of what happens by U.S. policies, including the new Cold War on China, too, that it, in the long run, will be self-destructive and self-isolating. I'm not sufficient. I mean, I just heard about these sanctions now. I'm not an expert on sanctions. The usual consequences of sanctions that you also know from your own country is that it destroys a middle class, it creates a mafia class, and it hurts the innocent people mostly. Whether this is different, I don't know. But what I find, just to go back to what you asked me, the difference between this and China-Taiwan is that the U.S. and the world has accepted long ago, 40, 50 years ago, that Taiwan is part of China. It's the one China policy. So if they should get, which I don't think they will, get into something with military means, it's completely different from Russia invading or bombing Ukraine. Secondly, I would say that what I noticed from this, listening to this press conference, is how much the free media are more radical, more anti-Russian, almost that President Biden has to defend himself against accusations that you're not doing enough. I'm wondering, is there nobody left in the Western press who can ask critical questions of any type anymore? This is allegedly free media, but there's nobody who has the intellectual or moral freedom to ask a critical question about anything the United States has done around the world the last 30, 40 years, or in this particular conflict the last 30 years, including Clinton's violation of all the promises given to Russia in 1994 by beginning to expand NATO. It is this, you know, media that dares not anymore, not capable or not willing to or not allowed to ask questions that I to people in power, that this fourth estate and all that, it is damn dangerous.
Thank you very much, Mr. Elia Magnier from Brussels, journalist and political analyst, and also founder of the transnational.live, Jan Olberg from Lund. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for elaborating, shedding light on the different aspects of this development, and of course sharing your views. And also, thanks very much for following this edition of Spotlight.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, ladies and gentlemen from each and every single corner of the world, hope everything is just fine with you. Whatever you're doing, driving your car, walking on your feet, going back to home after a long day, or just resting at home, I welcome your entrance to an extraordinary zone. You're hearing me from IRB English Radio. Get ready to fly with us in the realm of reality with a new episode of your program, Back to Reality. This is Asma at your service as your host, and here with me I have two very dear guests, Sister Zainab and Brother Habib. Very happy to have you both in here.
Assalamu alaikum. I'm also happy to be with you always.
Yes, I'm always glad to be with you.
And alaykum,
you, brother.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me on board.
Yes. Thank you for being here. Welcome to your program. So give us just a little bit about yourself, an introduction. Zainab, what are you studying?
Well, Asma, I'm Zainab Askari, and I'm a student of Hausa right now, and I'm done with Master's in Linguistics from University of Kashmir.
Linguistics is awesome. Okay, you, brother?
Currently studying in the Hausa, Kharij level, advanced level.